Baseball.
Ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for.
This is Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, and to say that my mind wasn't going different places during that kind of struggle would be lying to you. You know, there were times that I wasn't feeling too good, but, you know, that's what is so great about this team, this coach and stuff like that. You know, as soon as I started dragging my feet, you know, somebody was right there to pick me up and tell me to, you know, focus up and let's get going. And just pure joy going into that dugout after hitting that home run. I mean, everybody's happy. Everyone's jumping up and down. You know, it's not an individual thing out there. It's everyone with the team and, you know, whatever helps the team win.
That was Brandon Lau of the Tampa Bay Rays last night. As predicted in this very show, the Rays beating the Dodgers. Never in doubt.
Yeah.
Never in doubt. Hey, we got to talk about ass today.
Yeah.
Brandon Lau. Our friend Jeff Passan at ESPN is a terrific story on Brandon Lau and his hitting coach, a fellow named Hunter Bledsoe, his off-season hitting coach.
Yeah.
The key, and the reason I brought this up is because, Barker, you talked about the importance of the butt, frankly, yeah, to a lot of guys hitting.
Check out my Instagram. You'll see it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, according to Hunter Bledsoe, who's Brandon Lau's coach, and also Brandon Lau, the whole key to Brandon Lau's power is the rotation of his hips. Of course, you look at Brandon Lau, he's not the biggest guy in the world.
Uh-huh.
And Brandon Lau says that when he is scuffling, he can tell he's scuffling because his posterior position happens at the same time that his front foot is moving. He calls it swing breaking. So he's got four words in his brain that Hunter Bledsoe keeps telling him, and that is get the booty back.
They've been saying that a lot.
Get the booty back. So talk about that because, you know, look, we talk about hitting. We talk about, obviously, guys think strength, arm strength, you know, got forearms, legs, and all that stuff. But it seems to me that the hip rotation aspect, like when you watch Brandon Lau hit those home runs yesterday, this is going to sound stupid, his swing looks better when he does that than some of the other swings he was taking this series.
Yeah, look, I think it's one of those things when you start struggling, you expand. You start going outside the box, trying to cover the entire strike zone. You can't do that. No hitter can. Mike Trout can't do that. You know, the best hitters on the planet, Mookie Betts, can't do that. They have windows. They have boxes that they have to look in, and that's where they want the baseball. Brandon Lau's ball's away. You know, he got two balls away. It's a little middle up, and when he gets that, that gives him a better chance to get his arms extended. He don't like the ball in, and that's why the booty starts to go out, because you start to cheat. Your timing's off. Your balance is off. Your direction's off. All of those things add up to your booty being out. The further your hands get away from your body, Jeff, what happens? Mm-hmm. The weaker your swing gets.
Yep.
That's exactly what it looks like. So it's, you know, it's did the Dodgers make two of the worst pitches in all of baseball?
Yeah, we could.
Maybe. You know, again, it's more of, you know, if you don't hang an 0-2 breaking ball and you don't throw a 3-1 fastball middle away and a little up. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Brandon. Good mm-hmm. for him. You know, 6-for-56, no joke. That's not a slump. That's a canyon, like
especially in the playoffs. That is a playoff. Yeah, that is a canyon.
Tip your hats to the Rays and Kevin Cash for not giving up on him. Like a lot of managers, most managers, and most baseball teams, even though a guy had a good season, would not allow one of their better players to go 6-for-56. You can't do that. Like you know, especially this time of the year. Now, you know, fortunately for them, they had a guy hitting behind him, Superman.
Yeah,
that has been carrying their team, and obviously their bullpen's great, and yada yada yada, and their defense, all that, and it has allowed him to go through this, and they're still winning. That's the key word, winning. But you know, again, this is when you watch him, what do you see? He doesn't like the ball in.
No,
he doesn't like the back foot slider from a right hander. He doesn't like the spinner away from a left-handed pitcher. Those are the three things he don't like, and he doesn't like the velo up. That he's got a lot of holes.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between the regular season and the playoffs is the people in the playoffs can attack those holes. A lot of the teams in the regular season cannot do that.
You know what would be interesting to find out, and I don't know how one would go about doing this, because quite frankly, I don't know. I don't know if Kevin Cash would be honest. But he is, as you mentioned, he was 6 for 56.
Yeah.
We know the Rays are a very analytically inclined organization. I wonder whether it's swing path or whatever. I wonder what the reason would be that an organization that is so analytically driven and a manager who uses analytics as much as Kevin Cash would show faith with a guy who's 6 for 56.
Well, because
think that's it's as simple as that.
If they were losing,
because really, unless there's something we don't know, statistically, there's no reason for him to keep faith with Brandon Lau.
Yeah, they're winning. It allows him to give him a chance to work through it.
But even after they lost, that's true. But then they lost game one.
Yeah,
but he still came back.
It's game one. This far into it, why would you change now? It's like when we came on here yesterday and you watch him. Does it really help you if you move him down the order? Not really. Like, well, they're putting him in the best spot they can possibly put him in to get strikes that he likes to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because of who's hitting behind him. Mm-hmm. If they move him in the seventh spot, the people hitting behind him, Adamas, he couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. It's that kind of thing. So what good does it do? You know, you live and die with what you got. And right now that's what they got. And fortunately for them, you know, the Dodgers didn't make good pitches.
Well, we got to talk about that. 590-590 is a text line. You can reach out. We're going to, I think, probably devote a lot of the show to listeners today. So 590-590 is a text line. If you've got questions for Kevin or myself, please feel free to reach out. It is an off day in the World Series. Game 3 goes tomorrow, and it will be Charlie Morton against Walker Buehler. We got some thoughts about that matchup, but we got to talk about the pitching last night, the Dodgers pitching. I'm not talking about the number of pitchers. We can deal with that later, although I'm quite frankly bored of that topic.
2020,
and then we all, you know,
if you want to watch a baseball game, this is what you're going to watch.
Yeah,
get over it.
Yeah, exactly. I've moved beyond that,
yeah,
to be quite frank. If you're a baseball fan, I don't think you care how long the game goes. That's just me.
Did you care if it was 3 hours and 40 minutes yesterday? I didn't.
No, I didn't give a
match. I'm used to 3 hours.
The hell else am I going to watch?
Yeah.
Seriously, what am I going to watch?
8:07 or whatever time it starts.
I'm not going to watch it.
The difference it makes if it ends at 11:20 or 12:20.
I don't know.
Make no difference.
You're talking about losing young fans. Your kids are at home homeschooling anyhow. Doesn't matter.
There you go.
Kids are at home.
Papa Blair was watching.
The World Series does not. The whole thing with TV ratings in the World Series. We had David Sampson on Writer's Block. You know, everybody whines and moans about how long the games are taking. Everybody whines and moans about the World Series ratings. And every year, franchise value goes up. And every year, a national TV contract is negotiated. They make more money. The only people who care about the length of games are, one, the media, because you got to have something to talk about.
Yeah.
And two, people who aren't baseball fans. Anyhow, forget about that. We've got to talk about the pitching. Now, Buck Martinez pointed this out. And this, you know, I'm watching the game. Dustin May comes in. You know, Dustin May rolls out of bed and it's 102 miles an hour.
Man.
Well, you got to explain to me how a guy who can throw that hard is doubling up on 93, 92 mile an hour cut fastballs to Joey freaking Wendell. And Buck pointed this out.
Yeah,
I don't know. One, are pitchers in general too much in love with the cutter? And if so, why? And secondly, talk to me about that at-bat with Joey Wendell, because that was a big at-bat of the game.
You ever seen when Dave Roberts comes out to the mound and what the first thing he does is reach in his back pocket and hand a card to the catcher?
Yeah.
There's your answer. Why they throw things that they shouldn't be throwing, and you're going, this guy throws 100. Why wouldn't you make them hit your 100 that sinks, and you're 6'6"? And you do it from a weird arm angle with something that guys are not used to seeing, and that could get you through a tough inning or a tough at bat. Why don't you get beat with your best stuff? Now, the breaking ball that he threw, that the 0-2 pitch, that's the pitch he strikes everybody out with. Right. He just hung it. Like if he bounces it in front of the plate,
all right. I'm thinking about that pitch to Joey, Joey Wendell.
He doubled up on a cutter. The first cutter that we were watching that everybody saw was a good cutter that he fouled off. He jammed himself. If he throws it in that spot, Wendell's out. Just so happens it didn't cut. It started a little bit of middle away and ended up down the middle. Big league hitters hit that at 93. 93 is like 83 now.
Why wouldn't you? Okay, I've thrown that pitch, and I saw him foul it off. Why wouldn't I come back and throw something harder away, knowing that I can go back, right? Yeah. I can go back and throw the cutter on the 0-2, whatever the count was. In other words, what I'm saying is, I'm not going to double up on the same pitch. I'm going to throw something else that's going to change his eyesight, maybe get him thinking, and then come back with the one I just beat him. I don't know.
I really do think you mentioned bat planes and the way a guy looks. If you look at Joey Wendell, he has a very compact, short, little, tight swing. How do you want to try and get him out? Something that's moving to take the sting out of his bat, because they think if it's straight, doesn't matter how hard you throw it, he's going to have a better chance of hitting it. You know, the sinker from May doesn't always sink, but when it's 97 to 100, he can get away with that, right? So you would think that he would throw it more. But I really do think, Jeff, it is about, they have game plans going in on how they get every single one of these people out. That's why you saw Dave Roberts. However many times he walked out there, what, they used seven pitchers. So he walked out there six times and handed the card to the catcher and said, this is what, when this count, because of the where we're lining everybody up on defense, you have to throw it here. You can't give up a hit going away from that. Now, again, you got to locate it and you got to throw it to the spot where you're aiming. But that's why, for me, Dustin May is more of a thrower than a pitcher. If you've noticed how many spots he missed. Now, does he like the role he's in? Probably not. He's a young kid. You're asked to do something outside the box.
That's fair.
That is, you're doing it the biggest time of the year.
That's fair.
Take the ball in the fourth inning and go get some big, huge outs for the next inning and a half. It's impossible. Fair. Right? Yeah. It's impossible to ask a kid to do that. That's why I think the Dodgers knew going into this last night, it's going to be tough. You know, the Rays offensively aren't doing what they're doing, but their bullpen was ready to go for the Rays.
And you had Blake Snell. So you got to
think Blake Snell, you know, again, Blake Snell was great. He went 4 2/3.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, you look at that, 4 2/3, and he was great.
But yeah, I think your point is well made, because we know that teams script these things. And if you're the Dodgers, you're looking ahead to the matchups and you're thinking, okay, what's weighted heavily against us? What isn't? And if you're looking at game two and they're going with Blake Snell, you're probably thinking, you know what? It's not like we're not going to run up the white flag, but if you look at game one, game two, game three, and game four, where do we have the best chance of winning? Probably game two is the one matchup where we're just, you know, we're not that comfortable. We got an off day. Let's aim for Walker Buehler in game three.
Yeah.
And then we can go with Clayton Kershaw if we want coming back.
I think Dave Roberts' press conference after the game, the Zoom thing, when they were asking about Tony Gonsolin and May, you know, he was like, I still got confidence in him. Like, he really knew going into that it was going to be tough. It was going to be a hard road to go down and actually come away with that win. Again, you know, you do the best you can because of the offense you have. That you would think gives you a chance. But Blake Snell was great. I mean, let's face it, the strikeouts, the slider, the curveball was just enough to make the slider that much better. You have to respect the curveball. And then he throws the slider that's coming out of the same slot. And the one thing I noticed early was he was throwing more strikes with the slider. Now, every time that we've seen him, it was more of the biting, trying to get you to chase, which is what he's famous for. That's why you see the 4 2/3, because he throws a lot of pitches. You know, he had a couple last night, the first and third inning. I think he went 1, 2, and 3, which got him to the fifth inning. But it was more early for me. It was I'm going to throw it for a strike early in the game. And then later in the game, because I threw it early for strikes, now I can expand with it and get you to chase, which is, look, you know, there's how many lefties you see that can throw two secondary pitches like that? One that's the 12-6, and one that has the hard coming out of the hand, same slot, looks like a heater, and then has the late bite. And one can go more a little cutter. So he's really got three different secondary pitches.
Kevin, I got to tell you,
which is pretty good.
If Tyler Glasnow gets that third pitch, and you got those two guys,
they're gonna be good for a while. Is what you're saying? And the way they, you know, just go out and get anybody, Aaron Loop, that can come into and throw 97.
Okay. I got to talk about that. Now we are getting texts 590-590. Name and location, please. We will get them. We got a lot of time today. Very laid back show. It's an off day. I stayed up late to watch that sucker. You know, I haven't had enough coffee, all that good stuff. So we're going to be really laid back today.
We're in the show of the people. So,
you know, so
Texas.
590. Aaron Loop. Now, I'm watching the game last night, and I get a text. I'm not saying who the text is from. And no, it's not John Gibbons, so stop it. Every time I say, I got a text, somebody says, hey, you spoke to Gibby. It's not Gibby. It's not Gibby. So anyhow, here's the thing.
Does Gibby like you?
I don't know.
Like, if you really ask him, what do you think he'd say? Like, well, tell me the truth.
I think, I think Gibby was a little upset that at the end of his managerial career here, I was writing and saying that I thought it might be time.
I mean, he was here 10 years. So to your defense, it was time for him to go.
Anyhow, well, there I don't know go. About that. But I mean,
10 years is a long time. One team.
I have a lot of opinions about baseball. I watch it. I'm there every day.
We're huge fans of Gibby.
Yeah. No, the text was not from J.P. Ricciardi either. So stop it. Anyhow, 590 is the text. This is what's happening here. Okay. It's 11:22 p.m. Text from...
Da-da-da.
We're going to call him Deep Throat. Text from Deep Throat. What could go wrong here? My response, nothing, LOL, because it's Aaron Loop pitching. What could go wrong? Aaron Loop gets out of the inning. Man, if only we'd used him in higher leverage situations. My response was, if only you knew. Exactly. I'm not going to say who that is, but the idea was that somebody on those teams when Aaron Loop was a Jays reliever, and look, Aaron Loop was probably... Well, I'm not going to say the least effective relief pitcher. That's not fair. Aaron Loop was probably the guy that engendered. Nice word. The guy you probably had the least amount of confidence in coming into the game when he was
a
reliever.
You're holding your breath.
You're holding your breath.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin Cash clearly isn't holding his breath when he brings Aaron Loop. Aaron Loop's been not just good for him this year. Aaron Loop's been very good. Now, you had an interesting point. I came in, of course, talking about Aaron Loop before he went in the air, and I said, like, is he doing something different? You know, and I want you to tell the listeners what you told me about Aaron Loop, because I think you hit the nail on the head.
I told you a lot of things. What was it? Do you remember?
The part about Aaron Loop being the type of pitcher that when you see him a lot, when you see him repeatedly,
American
League East guy, you see him time after time after time after time, that it gets a little easier to pick him up. Now, although I would argue that this year he was only pitching against the American League East during the season and the National League East, and his numbers were still good.
Yeah.
But is it that different to see a lefty throw like that?
Sure it is. So somebody that's had some velo like he has, you know, it's 95.
And again,
95, he used to throw 92, 93 when I saw him a lot. Now it's 94, 95.
And I'm going to tell
that's
you.
That's a big deal.
I think I am dead on that we are not seeing guys pitching like it's October.
Yeah.
We are seeing guys pitching like it's the seventh week of the season for
them. I think
them.
You're spot on there.
And they got lots of velo.
They have lots to the arm.
This is July
healthy.
And August.
Yeah.
And I think... But still, 90s. And with control. And with control. And 97 with control.
And it's warm there in Texas, too, which is that helps, too.
That's
you know,
true.
You're free and easy. You're loose, that kind of thing. 95 is coming out of the hand hot. You know, I think his sinker's better. I think he's added the cutter. I think he can go both sides of the plate. I think mechanically he's getting it in that slot. That weird little thing where he releases it from because he throws across his body. And a lot of the time he's only seeing his target with one eye. I really do think the direction when his finish, he finishes with both eyes on the target. I used to see that all the time when he was here, and you would flip it around and you could see the camera view from behind the hitter and see whenever he was looking at his target, he was peeking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always like, why? How are you throwing strikes if you can't see where it's going?
Yeah.
And then last night they sort of you started seeing a little bit when he would land or start his approach towards the plate, he was more direct to the plate where he was using both eyes. I know that sounds simple, but when a guy is locating a little bit better and he can do it to both sides of the plate and he's freer, like it's just freer and easier, and he's expanding with his little curveball he's got because of where he releases it from. Now, again, you got to be careful when you use him. You know, you use him against pinch hitters, guys that's been sitting over there for 3 hours.
Correct.
And you use him against the lefty like he did Cody Bellinger. You know, you can expand and you can speed him up with that 95 middle away, those kind of things. But hey, listen, when Kevin Cash just seems to be like, it's okay. Like, you come here and everything will be great. Like,
oh, really?
If I put you in the game, you're going to dominate. Just like everybody else that I put in the bullpen. And you know, I'm going to throw anybody out there, and they're going to come in the game and do whatever I tell them to do, whenever I tell them to do it, and they're going to be great at it.
They have figured something out. Yeah. They figured something out about pitching. I swear, I normally wouldn't say that, but they figured something out.
I think it's a combination of how much and when they use their pitches. And where they put their defense. But I really do think the confidence.
We talked about that pitch to the shift, right? We watched the Dodgers. Who was the at-bat
when we came on?
It was Dustin May.
Margot.
That's right. Margot. They put a shift on.
The two-strike 99-mile-an-hour sinker that was middle away, and he just sort of tapped it to right field.
Well, you're basically inviting him to hit away from the shift.
Now, that's why I said he's more of a thrower than a pitcher, because they were trying to go into the shift. He misses his spot. Tip your hat to the hitter. You can do that on this show occasionally. You tip your hat to the hitter, and he just sort of flipped it and put it in play. Again, they struck out 7 times last night. They're averaging about almost 11 strikeouts a game. You strike out 7 times, it means you put more balls in play. You're getting more hits. You're putting more pressure on defenses. Kiki Hernandez.
That was
right. Turn the double play. That might have been a different game. The Dodgers might have been up 2-0.
Yep.
Little things in the playoffs, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. 590 is a text line. We're getting a lot of texts. Keep it coming. We'll get to it next after the break. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The text line is open. It is 590. It is an off day in the World Series, not an off day for those of us on Baseball Central. However, Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker, I thought about this during the break. We were talking about the Rays and their pitching magic and how they figured something out. But if that's the case, Kevin Barker, Jim Hickey, who was their longtime pitching coach, went to the Chicago Cubs. It didn't work. He's now with the Washington Nationals.
Talent.
You're saying it helps to have Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow?
Coaches are only as
Nick
good
Anderson.
As their players. Come on.
Nathan and Brantford. Guys, I love this series. Looks like the analytics part of the game is still there, but I've noticed the manager's gut feeling is coming back. At least I hope it is. Baseball is so much better when emotions all are involved, not a computer, Nathan Brantford. I don't agree with you, Nathan. I think the computer's still running the show, but again, I will get back to this point. I am surprised and impressed that Kevin Cash is stuck with Brandon Lowe for this long. And other than taking him out of the game, other than sitting him the one time, and the beauty about what they did with Brandon Lowe is that they made it so clear. I have never seen a benching less like a benching.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
so
the way it was handled.
Nobody knew it.
Yeah, nobody knew it.
It was like, you wouldn't even know he got benched.
No, I mean.
Yeah.
It was just, yeah. Got a day off.
I didn't play.
Kevin Cash knows his guys. But again, I do find this interesting.
Randy Arozarena has been a big help for that.
Yeah.
Because if he wasn't hitting, all the spotlight would be on the guy that's 6-for-56.
I would love to know who in the Rays organization, when they were putting together that deal, said, we should try to get Arozarena in here.
Yeah, but I hope he got a raise.
Is Derek Fisher not available?
That's an interesting text that we got there.
Yeah.
Dave Roberts, I mentioned this to you before we came on the show. How, when you're going into a game and knowing that your starter's going to go an inning plus, however many, you know, Gonsolin went an inning and a third.
So you know that going in the game. You say, we're going to have him one time through the order, and then we're going to change.
So you got it on a piece of paper, because you can see Dave Roberts over there. Every time somebody do something, he'd write something down on that big, giant piece of paper he's got. How do you think he had it scripted that Gonsolin was going an inning and a third, or however many batters he go? However many batters he went. He went 6 batters. Do you think that's how they've scripted it out? Because that's what I'm saying. You had to figure he know he was going to use 7 pitchers.
Yeah.
So how do you know when to go get that pitcher is my point. Is it when they're in trouble?
Again, it's got to be
6 batters.
It's got to be analytics. It's got to be at this. I don't know. It has to be at this particular point after this number of pitches, his effectiveness falls off. And this is the thing
is it gut?
Well, the thing I find amazing about this, and it would be really good when baseball's over, give it every manager in the game a month to decompress And I think we might have Charlie Montoyo coming on.
Yep.
I want to ask him this, because if we agree that pitchers are not, this isn't a regular October for guys. Guys don't have 150 innings under their belt. Guys are feeling frisky. Guys are feeling healthy. You can script that out. But what if the guy that I'm planning to take out after an inning and a third is throwing 99, 100, and I'm getting down to the end, and I go, well, okay, this is not exactly how I had it scripted. That's where I wonder about the small sample size this year and analytically driven decisions.
Like the Kevin Cash thing, you got to figure he probably – Blake Snell was around somewhere around in the 80 pitch range.
Yep.
He threw 88 pitches. Right around that range, you're going to Nick Anderson. You sort of got that's a simple. It's simplified, right? That's who you're going to.
This gets to our point about Game 2 and some of the comments Dave Roberts made after the game, and it almost makes you think that the Dodgers sat down and planned out this series and said, "Okay, Game 1, yeah, it's going to be Kershaw. Game 2, I mean, whoever we use, if they use Snell." We don't want to use Walker Buehler then. If they use Snell, how are we going to use this? Where do we give ourselves the greatest edge? Now, would we rather have Walker Buehler against... See, I think Charlie Morton's performance in this postseason may have screwed some people up a bit. I think it may have screwed the Dodgers in some way.
I think the Dodgers more wanted Buehler for the third game and the seventh game.
Okay.
And if you have to have him, he'd come back on short rest for the sixth game.
But this is a question, Stephen Oshawa. Why was Urias not starting Game 2? One hole with the Dodgers is starting pitching, and I know he tossed three innings late in the Braves series, but it's not like he needs to be stretched out. Urias is starting Game 4 for them, I believe. I'll tell you why. I mean, I know why it is. I can tell you exactly why it is, because Dave Roberts was asked this question during the NLCS. He is extremely valuable as a three-inning reliever for the Dodgers, as well as a starter. So Dave Roberts' thing is, okay, if I go with him in Game 2, let's say I went with Urias in Game 2. Can't use him in Game 1 if I need him. Then he's going to be unavailable for Game 3. Yeah. Maybe ready for Game 4. I would rather be able to use Urias in the bullpen in Game 1 or 2. Then I got an off day. Mm. Then I got Walker Buehler. Then I got him.
Perfect.
So I think... It increases, Steve. It means that I am going to be able to use him in the series more than I otherwise would. Like, if this thing goes 7, I'll bet you right now he pitches in 4 of those games.
Maximize your best guys.
Exactly.
That's what he's doing.
And as I said, if it goes 7, I guarantee you Urias will pitch in those games. And if it's Game 7, he's going to have a significant role. And he's. Again, we just talk about this. The depth of pitching on really good teams scares the living hell out of me. You know, I look at the Jays, and they've made some progress. But holy mother of God, they're not close to the Rays.
Yeah.
They're not close to the Dodgers.
No.
They're not close to the Braves. And I don't mean, I mean, they just aren't.
You see what
they're
big,
not.
You see what big pitchers supposed to look like, right?
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, and they have to do it in the American League East.
They're just not. Anyhow.
Yeah.
That's something that I, as this season has gone on, something that I've realized is all the really good teams in baseball. Houston may be a bit of an outlier. But because they got by with no Justin Verlander and with Zach Greinke a mess, and they have a terrific bullpen. Now, I will say this, though. Those guys in the bullpen who were really good, Christian Javier, he's going to be in the rotation next year. We saw Framber Valdez. He's already in the rotation. He's going to be next year. So they got the makings of a good rotation as well. But that's one thing that scares me, Kevin, is when I watch the Braves, the Dodgers, the Rays, and then I look at the Jays starting rotation, I just go... Even if Nate Pearson shows up and throws 101 every game, they're not close to the Rays.
It's still about
not
pitching,
close.
Pitching and depth in your pitching, quality depth. That's what you try to surround your organization with is you got to have it at the big league level, and then you got to have it everywhere in your minor league level.
Yeah. Like who's Let me see an example here. I'm not going to insult anybody. But who's the Ryan Barucki on the Dodgers or on the Rays? Probably somebody who throws 100. You know, you know what I'm saying? And that's not an insult against Ryan, but I'm...
Urias,
yeah. And he's... This is just not an insult, but it does, to my mind at least, just reinforce how far away this team's pitching is. Okay, this is from Dave in Collingwood. Hey, guys, at one point last night, the play-by-play guy with buckets, Matt Vasgersian, by the way, said that Snell is an ace, but not the type of ace that will go 7 or 8-plus innings. One, do you agree? And two, is that the definition of an ace going to change from the horse that goes 7, 8, 9 to a guy that goes 8 strong and turns it over to the bullpen? Thanks, Dave in Collingwood. You know, what's an ace? Hyunjin Ryu is the Jays' number one starter. Does that make him an ace? I've got an old school idea of an ace. To me, Roy Halladay was an ace. A guy who was a stopper. A guy, not only a guy who would dominate, but a guy who, if I was in the middle of a 3-game losing streak, was going to come in and say, that's it. Enough. Done.
He's going to win. I figure out how to win the other 4 games.
I tend to agree with Kevin. I think we use the phrase ace or the word ace way too much. Oh, I think there's just a handful of true aces. I don't think Blake Snell is an ace.
Four and two-thirds wouldn't say that.
No, I don't think he's an ace. Now, at some point he might be, but I don't think he's an ace. I look around baseball, who do I consider to be an ace? Max Scherzer, when he's healthy, Justin Verlander, Garrett Cole, absolutely, yeah. Garrett Cole. Clayton Kershaw, I don't know. Probably
now,
not.
Now, to Blake Snell's defense, on his team, he doesn't need to be an ace. Now, if he went to another team and they said, we're going to give you a longer leash.
If he was on the Jays, he'd be pitching 7 or 8.
If you notice, his pitching style is, I'm going to empty the tank as quick as I possibly can.
Right.
You're getting my slider, my curveball, my changeup, my elevated fastball, my fastball in, my fastball down and away, and you're getting it in the first inning.
Sorry, I want to interrupt. This was John Smoltz. I had the wrong Buck mixed up. I was thinking Buck Martinez. John Smoltz, my bad.
Yeah.
Okay. He was talking about that. Yeah, it's a good question. I don't throw the word around that much because I've got, you know, I'll look at the teams that I covered and who are the aces in those teams. Well, Dennis Martinez was an ace on the Expos when I covered them. And Dennis was just a guy that could be unbeatable. Pedro Martinez, probably the first guy I covered where he was absolutely an ace.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays, I mentioned Doc.
Randy Johnson.
I wasn't around for Steve. Randy Johnson was there. Yeah, I wasn't around for Steve. Steve would qualify as an ace. Roy was an ace. The Jays really...
Everybody's got their own definition.
Yeah, you know, the Jays, Marco Estrada, Marcus Stroman, none of those guys were aces. David Price, I don't think he was an ace when he was here. Yeah, and I don't think he's been an ace, frankly, since his early
track
days.
Track record. You know, habits. Habits mean, you know, when you take the ball, you're going to win most of the time.
Yeah,
I know wins don't matter a whole lot.
Pat Henkin,
but you're gonna. There you go. You're gonna keep your team. You're gonna give your team a chance to win, just about every time you go out.
590-590 is the text line. It's an off day for the World Series. We got a lot of texts. We will get to them. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. All right, welcome back to Baseball Central. 590-590 is a text line. Roger Clemens is a Blue Jay, absolutely. And I've said this, and this will create a little bit of controversy, but what the hell, maybe we'll do it during baseball season. Roger Clemens' name should be up in the level of excellence. Back-to-back Cy Young, baby. Best 2-year run of any Blue Jay starting pitcher. Roger Clemens, absolutely an ace. Jacob deGrom, yeah, we forgot. I mean, we're running through a list of names. The bottom line is Mike Soroka might be eventually, but the bottom line is there aren't that many aces.
They probably aren't.
Bingo, exactly.
Boom.
Exactly. Clayton in PEI wants to talk about the drunk fan who caught the homer and threw his glove in the field. Yeah, I did not understand that. I don't know. Maybe the guy got confused, got excited, whatever. But I have to tell you this. I realized how much I missed being in the ballpark when the dude with nice swing on the back of his shirt caught that line drive.
Yeah, well,
I swear to God, you know what? Normally that happened, I don't pay attention. I'm watching that guy catch the ball in an empty stand, empty stands or nearly empty stands. I think there was like 8,000 people there, and I'm thinking to myself, I have not been in a freaking ballpark since summer, the summer training, spring training, whatever it was, summer camp. I miss that.
I'm with you.
I miss
walking up to a player and going, can you tell me how you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, it was the guy, I'm being credited. It was the guy who was with Buck Martinez, not Joe Buck. So good for you. You were watching the feed on Sportsnet, the international feed.
I'm lost. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Because you're watching you got to watch the Sportsnet feed.
I do watch
Buck Martinez and that Vasgersian. Well, John Smoltz isn't with those dudes. John Smoltz is on Fox.
Okay.
There's some stuff today, man. I tell you, there's stuff going on. 590 is a text. I just saying.
What do we got?
Oh, we got the usual complaining about Shapiro, Atkins, and Montoya. Why, people? I'm not even going to go there. George in Toronto, my favorite part of baseball has always been ace versus ace, and the analytics trend has basically made these matchups extinct. Roy in his prime against any other ace in his prime was a matchup I never missed. Yeah, I still think there's a little bit. And actually, speaking of Matt and Buck Martinez, they had that discussion during the telecast last night. I think there's still always going to be a little bit of gut involved in managing. But what I think is going to happen is it's going to be so obvious. You know, like Dusty Baker. That's an example. It's going to be so obvious. We came on like Dusty Baker had found a cure for COVID-19.
Yeah.
Because he went out and his catchers basically said,
We got this. Go away.
And he turned around. He didn't pick a little card out of his pack and go, well, my analytics guys tell me that the left to right quadrant of the swing pack, he didn't do any of that.
There's a easy explanation. Because
he's Dusty Baker.
And he doesn't care to lose his job. Most of these other managers can't do that. Most of that is scripted. Here's how you do it. This is when you do it. We highly recommend that. We're not going to tell you that. We highly recommend it.
Nathan says, you guys are right about the pitching. The Jays are kids compared to the big boys.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I'd go that far. But again, I will reinforce what I said, that I have seen an awful lot of pitching in the postseason where I sit back and go, okay, who in the Jays would be better than that guy? And
I just think until the Jays figure out who they could match up against a Blake Snell,
yeah,
or a Charlie Morton,
yep,
or a Walker Buehler, like would you feel comfortable? Were you Buehler?
Mm-mm.
I wouldn't really either. So there, you know, it's...
This is going to be really unfair what I'm going to do. I'm going to apologize in advance, but I'm going to call up the Blue Jays roster. And this isn't to trash anybody, but I think it's a little bit of an exercise here. I'm going to call up the Blue Jays roster pitching and say, all right, who of these pitchers, because the Rays are going to, the Eastern Division champion.
I hear you.
All right. Who of these Jays pitchers would make either of these?
Everybody
staff.
Listening, play along.
Play along. Chase Anderson? Nope. Anthony Bass?
In the sixth inning.
Ryan Barucki?
Fifth inning.
AJ Cole? Nope. Rafael Dolis? Nope. Over who? Don't think so. Thomas Hatch?
Nope.
Don't think so. Anthony Kay? Mm-hmm. Don't think so. Julian Merriweather? I mean...
5 years from now.
Patrick Murphy? Nope. Nate Pearson? Yeah, not... From what we saw this year, could you see Nate Pearson pitching in one of these games? I understand that this is partly... This is a little bit unfair. But work with me on. We're just trying to figure out where the Jays stand.
Not next year.
Robbie Ray? Yeah, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Hector Perez, Sean Reed Foley, nope. Tanner Roark, nope. Jordan Romano. The Jordan Romano at the start of the year, yeah, he'd probably find his way on the Rays staff because they'd look at him and they'd go, we could. Jordan Romano on the Rays would be Pete Fairbanks.
They would do something different to it. Like,
yeah. Hyunjin Ryu. Okay, is Hyunjin Ryu going to start over Blake Snell?
Nope.
Nope. Clayton Kershaw?
Nope.
Nope. Walker Buehler?
Nope.
Nope. Tyler Glasnow?
Nope.
Nope. Julio Urias?
You'd have to think about it.
Charlie Morton? Nope. Where are we with the Dodgers starters after that?
Dustin May, Tony Gonsolin?
Maybe.
Those two he would.
So he would at best be the fourth starter, third starter. Matt Shoemaker? Nope. Ross Stripling? Nope. Jacob Wagespack? Nope. Taiwan Walker? Nope. Shun Yamaguchi? Nope. TJ Zoic? Nope. And it's just an exercise. And I'm not ripping anybody or criticizing anybody. I'm just saying that when I compare the Blue Jays pitchers to what I'm seeing now, and you can throw the Braves in there as well you want. Cool. There's a, here. Joe Kelly, what would he be in the Jays?
Setup guy.
Or closer, maybe. He'd be in the conversation. I mean, the Dodgers, he's just kind of a guy for the Dodgers.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. So the point I'm making is as I watch the World Series, understanding that managers use different pitchers differently, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That as a Blue Jays fan, that gives me cause for concern, and it just reinforces in my mind something I've said that the Jays timeline for contending in a regular season depends entirely on Nate Pearson. Nate Pearson is the one guy in this organization, maybe Simeon Woods Richardson. Haven't seen enough of him. But right now, everything everybody's told me about Nate Pearson, he's the one guy in this organization that is on the same kind of level as these guys that we're seeing in the World Series. And it's not just all about velocity, but a lot of it is velocity.
Nate Pearson throw a fastball to a fastball hitter in a fastball count and get away with it?
The guy this year couldn't, no.
That's until forget about the secondary pitches when he can throw them. When he can throw that to a really good fastball hitter in a fastball count and he's late early because he has to cheat, throws it by him because he's locating it, he's elevating it. Now we're talking.
Mark Shapiro did his media availability yesterday. There wasn't there was the end of season availability. There wasn't a great deal to come out of it. Mark wouldn't comment on his job status other than saying he wants to stay here, and his understanding is everybody here wants him to stay here. So I take that. It doesn't surprise me. I would think at this time that there's a lot going on with this organization. There's absolutely no reason to make any changes that I've seen. Yeah, I mean, unless there's somebody out there that thinks that this year was a step back. I will say this because we got a few minutes left, and I know there were a lot of people were sort of saying, "Well, why does Mark dodge that question so much?" Well, first of all, I'm not certain it's up to Mark Shapiro to announce when he signed, and the other thing is, keep in mind that one of the things that has happened this year with the Blue Jays is they've had to lay some people off. Most baseball teams have had to lay people off as a result of the pandemic. And we're talking about front office people, scouts, people in the minor league system. Like, the game's going through an awful lot right now. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying this. If Mark Shapiro felt as if it would be a little unseemly to let people know in the middle of this what his job status is, I can understand that. I'm not certain if I was in a position where I'd laid a bunch of people off, I'd be trumpeting that I'd signed a contract. So I'm just throwing that out there for people, because I know there was a lot of, everybody wants clarity. Everybody wants everybody to be obvious about everything and say everything and yada, yada. So just keep that in mind. As I mentioned, other than that, Charlie Montoyo, a vote of confidence, not that type of vote of confidence, but it's pretty clear that the organization is happy with the job he did. He is going to be joining us tomorrow, Charlie Montoyo, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. And I think one of the things that did come out, Kevin, of that conversation with Mark Shapiro was, it's probably no surprise, but I think there was an awful lot involved in keeping that team together, given the fact that they didn't have a home ballpark until they got to Buffalo, given the fact that just the way their schedule was. I think there was a lot of stuff involved there. There's no media around that team. I'm not saying that there were fist fights in the clubhouse or anything like that. Yeah. But I'm just saying, I think that a lot went into the management of that particular situation that we just don't know. And frankly, may never know.
Yeah, so. I think next year's a big year for coaching staff as a whole.
Yes, I agree with you on that.
I don't think they can finish 15 games under 500.
Oh, no.
I don't think that.
No. No, and there has to be. Again, you know, we've talked about this. There has to be improvement in Vladdy, Bo. I mean, I don't even throw Bo out there. Yeah. Bo's going to be fine. But you have to be able at the end of the year to look at things and go, okay, what did we see from this particular player? Like, I keep making this point. With all the stuff that went on this year, sorry, I didn't mean to hit the shower curtain. With all the stuff that went on this year, Vladdy and everything.
Mm-hmm.
That guy played every game. And I understand that people are going to say, well, you know, he's a professional athlete. There weren't a lot of players who played every game this year. Take a look. I do believe there were 15 or 20 players in the majors who played every game.
Mm.
That, to me, is a start. Vladdy stayed on the field. He wasn't always great, but they didn't take him out because he had an ache or pain. So I'm just saying, I think we're still at the stage with the Blue Jays where we need to see measurable improvements and things like that. Kevin's right. If they're 15 games under 500 next year, you got to make changes. But if you can show improvement and be competitive, I don't know if they're going to go to the playoffs next year. I don't know if this team would have made the playoffs in 162 games. Matter of fact, I don't think they would have. But if you can show improvement and be competitive, I think that's a start. And Charlie did that this year. They improved and they were competitive.
Be in the hunt in September. I think that's all you can ask for.
Charlie Montoyo joins us tomorrow. Again, it's an off day for the World Series. We'll get you set for Game 3 tomorrow on Baseball Central. Don't go anywhere. Writer's Block is next.